controversial.
Yes.
While we're gearing up here, I want to acknowledge my co-author, Katie Howe, who's here in the red jacket.
Woo!
She did all the analysis for her master's thesis. So we're going to talk now, we're switching gears to treatment of Trichomonas vaginalis and looking at single dose versus multi-dose. So we all know that Trichomonas is an STI caused by a parasite, Trichomonas vaginalis, that cute little bug over there, little parasite on the right. It's the most prevalent non-viral sexually transmitted infections. In the U.S., there's estimates anywhere between 3.7 to 7 million. It eclipses gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis in its prevalence, and there's about 276 million worldwide. So I always feel like I have to defend the importance of Trichomonas, so there you go. It's associated with vaginitis, cervicitis, urethritis, pelvic inflammatory disease, and in pregnant women, it's associated with adverse pregnancy outcomes, particularly premature rupture of membranes, about 30 to 40%, preterm delivery, delivery of low birth weight infants, and it's most importantly, it's been associated with both transmission and acquisition of HIV, so it's important. Metronidazole is also called Flagyl in its proprietary name. It's a Class B drug, so concerns about giving it in pregnancy. However, ACOG and CDC have all recommended that in the single dose, it's okay in pregnancy. Shouldn't be mixed with alcohol. It should definitely treat symptomatic. It's a little more controversial if you should treat asymptomatic. However, it's done all the time. Partners should be treated, and we know that the FDA has approved the single dose of 2 grams one time, or the 250 milligrams three times a day for 7 days. CDC has a little bit different, and WHO have a little bit difference on the multi-dose. It's either 400 or 500. In the United States, it's 500 milligrams twice daily for 7 days. So the benefits of the single dose, back in about the 70s or 80s, we were using multi-dose, and we decided to go to single dose because it's cheaper. It has greater adherence. You can directly observe, and then nurses can administer in public health environments. So there's a great advantage to it. And I don't know if you would rather take 4 pills at once or 2 pills, or two pills twice a day for 7 days. I don't know which you would prefer, but I'd probably want to take the single dose. But we were seeing recurrence rates. We've seen a lot of recurrence rates. And so the recurrence rates can range anywhere from 8% to up to almost 36% in HIV-infected women. So recurrence is a big problem. We're not really 100% sure if it's reinfection or if it's persistence, but let's just go with persistence for this moment. So methods. We did a comprehensive literature search. We used MBASE, Medline, clinicaltrials.gov, and we looked, searched up until January 25th of 2016. We used all the different search terms below, Trichomonas, trichomoniasis, metronidazole, et cetera. We didn't really have an exclusion that it was written in English, but if there was something in French or Spanish, I could have handled it, but we didn't see any in French or Spanish. Mm-hmm. But so other inclusion, it had to be a clinical trial. It had to evaluate trichomoniasis, and it had to evaluate metronidazole. It has to also compare single to multi-dose, and multi-dose in different formats was okay. This study selection, we evaluated them. We searched and evaluated completely independently of one another, and then we came together and came to consensus on if the study was eligible or not, and then we went and read any full-text articles and looked for additional, if there were any additional studies that we found from the references of those chosen studies. Data collection was abstracted using a standardized form, was compared in duplicate. Variables included blinding, randomization, number of study participants, HIV status, loss to follow-up, number of participants, types of treatment, and number of treatment failures. So we collected all that information. We gave an evaluation. We evaluated the quality of the study using 3 different criteria, if randomization was there, if blinding was there, if there was minimal loss to follow-up. If they fulfilled all 3 criteria, we determined them to be of low bias. If they had 1 or 2 criteria, we determined them to be of medium bias. If they didn't have any of the criteria, that was considered high bias. Statistical analysis, we used data, and relative risks were calculated. We used pooled effect size using a fixed effect model. If it was for significant for heterogeneity, it was found that it would be calculated with a random effects model. We also did some subgroup analysis because there was one study that was exclusively HIV-infected women, so we wanted to remove them to look at it both ways. and then also sensitivity analysis to look at the quality of the study, which I just described. So the results. We had 484 unduplicated papers that we reviewed. We reviewed the abstracts of the 471 that did not meet inclusion criteria. There were 13 full texts that were screened. Seven were excluded, five because of duplicates, so two studies were using the same data set. One was not a clinical trial. One did not compare single dose to multi-dose. And six articles were finally excluded or included in the model. So the study characteristics, one, as I mentioned, one study was HIV exclusively. The rest were before the time that we knew about HIV. So HIV probably either negative or we unknown. The risk, one study was low risk of bias. Three studies were medium risk of bias. And two studies were high risk of bias. We, we used fixed effect model because of the lack of they were homogeneous, so we were able to use the fixed effect models. And we used an inverse weighting method. I'm not expecting you to be able to read this. It's going to be published in STD in a couple of months, so you can, if you want to know the details. But I just wanted to point out a couple of things. First of all, most of these studies, in fact, all of them with the exclusion of one, were done in the 80s or earlier. So this has not been a topic that's been reviewed very recently. Many of them were randomized. The sample size were all quite small. As I mentioned, most of them were of medium to low quality. So you have to consider that in the inputs. Okay, so this is the force plot where you look, anything that's to the left of that vertical line would indicate that treatment failure in favor of multi-dose. Anything to the right is treatment failure in favor of single dose, meaning that there's more treatment failure. So as you can see, almost all of the studies were to the right, and the summary is that single dose had a 1.87 times greater likelihood of treatment failure compared to multi-dose. So in summary, the results significantly favored the multi-dose. Women who received single dose metronidazole were 1.87 times more likely to experience treatment failure. When we did the sensitivity analysis and removed the HIV-infected study, we did not see a great difference. It remained statistically significant. It attenuated a teeny bit, but not greatly. Limitations of the study, of course, that the quality of the studies were not at the same level of what we'd be doing in this decade. possible but not probable that some studies were omitted just because of our exclusion criteria or in our language barrier, but the ones that we did exclude were mostly in, I think, Czechoslovakian, which I personally am not fluent in, so I couldn't read them. Assessment of publication bias was not possible because the number of studies were small. So you can't really do that kind of assessment when there's less than, we only had six studies. There's a scarcity of studies that evaluate this topic. Clinical trial methods have been improved substantially since the 1980s when most of these studies were done, and they're difficult to assess side effects. And not all positive tests at follow-up were treatment failures because, I didn't mention, but most of them used microscopy or culture. I think one of them used culture. And now we have more sensitive nucleic acid testing, but none of them use that. And so in conclusion, while the studies that served as inputs for this meta-analysis were few, and most were conducted over 30 years ago, all but one study indicated superiority for the multi-dose over single dose. So that is, and as you know, we did a study with HIV-positive women and found that the single dose did not work was not as effective in HIV-positive women as it compared to the multi-dose. So CDC did change their recommendations for HIV-positive women to use multi-dose. Future directions, I think that more studies are needed that are multi-centered, using more rigorous methodologies as described in the clinical trial in the NIH study website there. Also, they should be presented using consort standards And I just want to put in a shameless plug that we happen to have one of those studies going on right now. Funded by NIH, Carolyn Deal not here, but thank you. And Christine Musney, and there's some probably Leander Maynard's here. So we're doing a multi-centered study right now where we're looking at that using nucleic acid amplification techniques. We're improving, making sure our follow-up is correct, it's an IND study, so we're adhering to all FDA regulations, and we have 550 enrolled, and we're hoping that and Sarah Lynn is collecting data, so that we'll be able to report that, I hope, in next year. So thank you so much for your attention. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer.
We're certainly going to look forward to the results of that study.
Me too. Thank you.
Hunter is approaching.
Hunter Hanfield, Seattle. Wonderful analysis. I'm so glad you did it. And as being one of the few people in the room old enough to have been around when those early studies were done, I have spent 30 years lecturing about the fact that metronidazole single dose is the only therapy in the treatment guidelines which we know more or less with some accuracy has at least a 10% failure rate. All right. The others, we have a higher standard. And this one, for some reason, we don't. So I'm not at all surprised. I would predict when you use NAT that I would have considered my sample size calculation for the NAT-based study at a 25% failure rate. Is what
we
I would
did. I
guess
think we did
it
at 19%.
Okay.
From our preliminary.
So and you didn't. That was my next question, though. You didn't. You didn't state the numerical rate, but my quick look at your slide looked like around 10% failure rate. Is that?
We didn't have an overall failure rate. I don't think this is relative.
Oh, that's relative risk.
That's relative risk. So if you look at
it,
that is 1.87 times more likely to have treatment failure if they were in the single dose.
And what was that likelihood? What proportion of people with single dose therapy were positive by wet mount or culture at follow up in the study? I think it's in the 10% range for most of them, isn't it?
Lost to follow-up. I don't think we have that here. I think I took that off of this slide. Okay. But we definitely have it in the paper that's coming out next month. I thought you would have reviewed it. You probably didn't.
I'd love to, but I didn't.
It's coming out in STD, and so we'll have all those details. But we generally see about I think a 15 to 19% failure rate with NAT.
And what's your sense, and have you looked at the literature in a systematic way for tinidazole?
For tinidazole, we didn't look at it. I know that it's a little bit better, particularly for men, but it's having some breakthrough as well.
The last thing.
And also, it's more expensive, so it may not. It might be cost.
The last thing is just another. It's a minor thing, and I say it with a smile. But it's an absolute myth that metronidazole interacts adversely with alcohol. Doesn't happen. Oh. It is based on a total of like four cases in two case reports. In the 1960s, and it was not confirmed in such.
That's when in those inserts in the FDA, you have to say that. But that actually would be helpful if somebody would ever study that, because a lot of people don't want to take the medicine because they don't want to refrain from alcohol.
Yeah, it's not a contraindication, and we've never used it as such. At least I don't know if Matt, you're still worrying about that, but I certainly didn't.
All right. Well, thanks, Hunter. I appreciate your comments.
Thanks.
Any questions?
Yeah. Hi, Noreen Hines from Johns Hopkins. I have a question for you. In the studies that you accepted, was one of the questions that was asked is whether or not people took it with or without food in a two-hour period before, because the original licensing, the approval for the drug, really only included about 14 people in which they studied that, in which the Cmax was different if you didn't consume food, and also your Tmax, not that the total absorption was, it was unchanged. But if that's an issue, one wonders whether or not that should be restudied, also the concentration in vaginal secretion.
So I do know that taking the 2 gram without something in your stomach is very hard on the stomach. So we always offer a little snack, like cookies or crackers or something.
So it's just an issue to see whether or not concentration at the site that you're directing it at.
So this, and this is more like, it's just a meta-analysis of all the studies that were done. But, yeah, that's a good point. Thanks.
Patty,
how you doing?
Was wondering about concomitant BV,
so,
and whether or not you can comment on that.
The only thing I can comment on is my own study, the Kissinger study, that I know that we measured Nugent score and that we found that the difference was found in the presence of asymptomatic BV. Mm-hmm. So when women didn't have a Nugent score above 7, then you could use either medicine, and it was fine. So I don't know if that's going to be reproducible in the HIV negative, and so hold the thought for that, and we'll have that out in a year or less.
So the issue is for your ongoing prospective study. Not only are you looking for BV, but are you able to type the isolate?
So we're in the new study.
Yes.
We're genotyping it. We're doing susceptibility testing of the organism. By the way, we're finding, like everybody finds, it's quite susceptible. And we are also we're doing intensive behavioral surveys with. So we're going to look at the genotyping, the sensitivity testing, and the behavioral exposure information and adherence.
Great.
So thanks. Yeah. Thanks for this question. Kind of hot.
Okay. Thank you.